Warning, this podcast contains bad words and stories about drugs and sex and overthrowing the government. Proceed with caution. Okay. Thank you. And now on to our show. Wake up, brother, we got nothing to do. Let's go outside, just me and you, and build a fort. We'll pack a lunch, won't be home till after dark. Then after dinner we can sneak back out. You know that high school girl I've been telling you about? Well, she gets undressed about a quarter to nine, and we can watch her do it from the big old pine next door. She got a room on the second floor. Well, looks like another fucked up day in paradise.
Welcome back to the Daughter of Godcast, episode 011. Dan Kelly here with Whispers from the Wonderful, Hints and Portents, the Handbook of Humanity, disguised as a podcast about movie making. This probably has already rocked you back in your control consoles, but unbuckle, there's a wormhole coming up. Dorothy Gale walks out of her aunt and uncle's house post-Twister, and from a black and white world emerges into a new dimension. Color. Here we go. Upping the dimensionality of the Daughter of Godcast. We're now offering both an audio and a video version. This is a big step. I was recording Daughter of Godcast in my studio sound booth, where I do voice acting and narration for podcasts like Starship Sofa and Clark's World. Kind of a cool environment. Dark, isolated, really quiet, except when there's a cricket invasion. The crickets. That was the clue 10 weeks back. If I'm narrating a story about traveling to a distant galaxy for a science fiction podcast, then crickets kind of break the suspension of disbelief. Daughter of Godcast doesn't require carefully controlled conditions. In fact, the actual conditions, here and now, are relevant to the story. They're fun! I am moving the recording out of the booth and into some of the other creation spaces. So another new dimension is not only being able to see me, but to peek at the places where much of the magic happens. A remote studio tour every week. Yay! So I'm a little nervous here because this is the first time I'm doing this in front of a camera. Thank you for your patience. For me, this means my life is even more available, more public. But hell, why not? I'm an artist, and artists create for fun and to share. So now I'll be creating even more. My life will be an almost continuous act of creation. Isn't that the point, folks? Shouldn't we all be deliberately creating our bliss rather than just accepting some arbitrary default? Especially if the default is anything less than stellar. Hi. Mwah. When I was a kid, I used to wish for things to be better. But eventually I stopped believing that I could have what I wanted. Feeling that way made me not want to want. Because I thought, what's the point? Frustrating to want things and to know I'm never going to have, be, or do any of them. But ever since I found this crystal sphere in a remote Irish cave, this crystal sphere that grants all of my wishes. Oh wait, this is the one that reverses the aging process. This one grants all my wishes. Yes, I always get them mixed up. Anyway, ever since I found this crystal sphere, I know... ever since I found this crystal sphere here, I know that I can have whatever I want eventually. I just have to hold this crystal sphere in my left, no, wait, my right hand, and decide to feel the way I'm going to feel when I have whatever it is that I want. And poof, eventually whatever I want with all my heart shows up. Now, this is my crystal sphere. So I don't know what you're going to do about living your dreams. That's not my problem. I don't recommend you come to my house and try to steal this sphere from me, because I know kung fu and I own lots of guns. Plus, I'm guarded by a crack crew of Valkyries, wind gods, water nymphs, uplifted field mice, and other uncommon allies you just don't want to fuck around with. You've got to just find your own sphere, or ring, or staff, or whatever, enchanted tiara. Or you could just try feeling great for no reason, as if you knew all your desires or something even better was for sure going to come true. Like the entire universe is itching to be of service. Anyway, watch and see how I pull this extended sharing off. And with the Project Momentum continuing to snowball, we'll share some full living together, getting virtuosic at playing the human game. This world wants more wizards. Episode 011. Time travel efficacy. In episode 010, I initiated a time travel experiment, drifting back in memory to whisper in my own ear. The text and audio of episode 010 appears to be just as I remember from last week. I have not yet equipped the fabrication studio with a temporal isolation vault, a TIV, a TIV, so we won't be able to publish the results in Nature just yet. I'm asserting episode 010 didn't change, because here I am, still talking about the time travel experiment that I outlined there. Otherwise, I'd be talking about how much my actors and makeup artist napped on location. They were like the ninja warriors of napping. At least, they were the ninja warriors of napping in that previous timeline. So now, we're looking for evidence to back up Anne's version from 008. That the production was frenzied, I was burning with overwrought intensity, the cast and crew were gritting their teeth at my frantic directorial style. If my time travel caper was a success, then we won't find much evidence of that, because we'll have slid over into another timeline. Are y'all with me? I promise I won't go into more theory. I can already hear snoring from the cheap seats. So based on the episode 008 narrative of inexperienced director, scheduling, and staff constraints, here's the scenario we would have expected to find. With no time to waste, the plucky Daughter of God team immediately started production, unpacked the vans, gathered incidentals from local merchants, deployed gear, set an ambitious shooting schedule, and bam! Lights, camera, action. That's not quite what happened. After checking the accounting records, watching the performances and outtakes, and reviewing other artifacts of that long ago, here's what the evidence shows. I lollygagged. I gestated. I pondered. So if you've been following along, that means that the time travel thingy worked. Look, I was fully in accord with Anne's version back in episode 008. I admit not really remembering the cast grousing to her, but my being a 100-watt bulb burning at 240 made perfect sense. We were late to the location. We had lost a member of our tiny crew. Of course I would have been harried and stressed. Plus, I've been building up that drama since episode 005. Now that I've tinkered with the timeline, the current artifacts indicate a different history entirely. The grooviest bit about this time travel technique is that the altered artifacts are presaged by a consistent chain of causality. Let me say that again. The altered artifacts are presaged by a consistent chain of causality. In other words, not only did the results change, but it's totally obvious why they did. For a seasoned director and full crew, 10 days is a long time to pull off 10 pages of screenplay in just two rooms. I was an experienced visual artist and cinematographer. I was also an experienced actor. I was fully aware that I was an inexperienced director. My directorial debut was designed with leeway to learn while doing, to adapt my existing skills. I wanted to be able to take my time, to experiment and play. Yes, we started getting ready, But I was assimilating the scope of the challenges for the first 4 days. I didn't even attempt to get usable dialogue takes until 5 days after arrival. 5 days. The crew was getting a bit antsy, wondering when we would actually start shooting.
Okay, Uncle Joe, but you did.
Here's the first test shot and run-through in Christina's cabin 5 days after we arrived. We were doing full costume takes later that day. I scheduled more time than I needed.
We're going to give birth.
I had anticipated doing most of the technical work myself. After 2 years documenting and shooting live performance in New York City, I knew how to light and shoot competently, how to record sound, and set up and break down quickly and efficiently.
I have hairy goat legs. Seriously.
Well, so I know so much more about these people than I
ever want to know.
You know, people can bring energy to a project, but they also take energy to manage. Back then, I hadn't yet learned how to optimize the formula. Too many people would drag down my autonomy and nimbleness. I did reach out and recruit, but once I had a couple of raging polymaths on board, I was satisfied. I brought a tiny crew on purpose. Inexperienced directors are often advised to surround themselves with expertise. I preferred to surround myself with amazing problem solvers who resonated with me, rather than experts who might not.
And then you start talking, blah, 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 blah.
Fine. Yeah, because you're still, that's fine. Just pick it up off your head and adjust it. Because basically,
you're... With Mary Lesbian too.
Yeah. That's beautiful. Perfect. Okay, you're right. You're absolutely right. Okay. That's the best way to do it. In a distant incarnation, I developed experiential software for hands-on museum exhibits, games. Way before I became competent writing my own code, I had collaborated with other coders. As the technical experts, they would often tell me this or that was impractical or couldn't be done. This felt frustrating and discouraging. Ultimately, a good thing, because I gave up on experts and became a badass coder myself. Guess what? I found out there was never anything I couldn't figure out how to do. The takeaway is best offered as an Einstein quote. Imagination is more important than knowledge. I love expertise, but I don't let experts define what's possible. My inexperience was a superpower.
You did it perfectly. It was right on. Just don't laugh afterwards.
Yeah, no, it was a little off, but it depends how it reads to you, right?
Great in the camera. I didn't see the switch, but you went click, and then the lights went bloomed into being. It was great.
Losing Eiji sucked, not so much because he knew how to do critical technical stuff, but because he's cool. I wanted his vision and sensibilities. An extra pair of hands for moving things around would have been helpful.
You know, my mouth is
just,
so dry.
Not yet, just when... We can put it down there for now, but we can give it to, what, you need some water?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you!
But, oh well. I taught Melanie the protocol for digital capture and monitoring. She's a fast learner.
Still no speed!
Still no speed!
Fuck, stand by.
She ran one laptop, and I ran the other. When we weren't shooting, she was propping and fabricating. Losing Eiji just meant my margin of error was reduced. I would be working a slightly more intense schedule and there would be less experimentation. Otherwise, doable. Leeway reduced, but still extant. We ended up with just the right number of people.
You want to take a peek at her?
Hmm? So here's a summary of what happened on the Big Boat production back in April of 2006. After I traveled back in time and tweaked things. I scheduled more time than I needed. I brought a tiny crew on purpose. My inexperience was a superpower. And we ended up with just the right number of people.
So nice. It's dreamy.
Dream, dream,
dream.
Dream, dream.
Dream, dream,
dream.
I let you with all my heart. Whenever you want me,
all I have to do
is dream.
Dream, 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 dream.
Okay, so I want to actually, you know what you could do for me, Steve?
Yes.
Downstairs, I need you to run an errand for me.
Okay.
Downstairs, go get the power supply
that's
hooked to the power bar in the office area. You're allowed to go in there. Tell Melanie you're cleared to come in.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
In this current, or to be more precise for those of you who transitioned with me, this remediated timeline, if we rewind back to April of 2006, I had fashioned an ideal environment for making my first featurette. I chugged along at a comfortable pace, was surrounded by resonating comrades, had all the resources I needed, and was feeling capable and confident.
Yeah, let's save that energy.
Okay, stand by. Quiet on the set. Action.
Clearly, time travel works. As we explore this tweak timeline in episode 012, I'll occasionally point out details that contrast with the left behind overwrought timeline. I'm so enjoying this sweet merging and upgrade of my memories.
Christy. We've got to do this over again. Fuck.
It is just part of your mortal milieu.
That's my line. Here he is. And it just drops off right there. It looks kind of like a blanket. I don't even think it looks like pants.
No, we'll stop after that, no matter what happens, okay? Mm-hmm. Actually, what we can do is, if we can get this first take all the way through good, then we'll just take it from the bed.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
Here we go.
But Doc, give me some time.
Yes. We're going to zip this episode up early, because we have a hunk of production theory and practice next week. With luck, we'll unpack the gory details while deftly avoiding spoilers. We've got 5 scenes to do, 2 with dual cameras and extensive coverage, which is multiple angles on the action. A goal I have for next week is to explain the intricacies of the process to non-movie makers while keeping the content interesting and relevant to those in the biz. I didn't get a call from President Donald thanking me for all my hard work duping Democrats to vote green. Or wait, was that President Hillary who I didn't get a call from thanking me for conning all the conservatives to vote libertarian? I'm a little mixed up. Those two timelines are so tough to tell apart. That's because the results of the US election are completely outshone by the ineluctable blooming of global compassion and rapport that's a consistent feature of every other nearby now. All the timelines in our local bundle are tinted gold with the dawning of planetary awareness. Winslow, who didn't set off a flare in my second grade classroom at St. Patrick's Parochial School, has tagged me as an Orwellian bloviator. Bloviator? Bloviator. Bluviator. But I don't presume to take sole credit for this ubiquitous blossoming across the adjacent timelines. Sure, Daughter of God may be contributing, but as I've stated before, there are strange attractors all over the planet configuring the freaks, longhairs, and ne'er-do-wells into exciting new gestalts. No matter what boogeyman or boogeywoman we choose to play national nemesis as our excuse for feeling funky, our wild wonder cannot be blocked for very long. We are the Thrive, but you might need a magic crystal sphere. Just find a hidden cave or sunken citadel or perhaps a non-Euclidean temple that's overrun by kudzu and get in there. You've been listening to the Daughter of God cast, episode 011. You are in on an 11-year odyssey of audacious mistakes on the fringes of credibility, making the movie that made me. And who am I? I am Dan Kelly, writer, director, savory spook, lollygaggist, hologram, stargazer, self-navigator. Oh, but you are the listener, and perhaps the watcher, the ultimate creator, inviting these sound waves and light quanta into your experience and instantiating another now. With just a smidge of cognition, you've teleported some version of me into your moment. Hello. This crystal sphere